My name's Sean Collier. There's Mike Rubino returning to the podcast, everybody.
Hello. Happy to be here.
Yeah. It was a night of giant monsters and nothing else really. We saw Rampage. You are an expert in ape-related cinema, of course.
Thank you. Yes, yes. Typically, the ape movies that I prefer are when they are running the planet. I needed them to take over.
You needed normal-sized apes, not enlarged
giant,
apes.
Not giant apes. But I was happy to see... I'm happy to always see large monsters fighting...
Sure.
Tearing up the town.
It's that and very little else, and we'll tell you more this week on You Can't Handle the Truth. It is You Can't Handle the Truth for Friday, April... Nope, I lost it. Almost got there in time. Friday, April 13th, 2018. And we're joined again, as you heard in the intro, by Mike Rubino, co-founder of Arcade Comedy Theater. Other credits.
I perform...
You know him as Jimmy the Worm Slayer, and the Knights of the Arcade,
That's
the
right.
award-winning Knights of the Arcade...
So many awards.
Yeah.
And I'm also a member of Warp Zone.
Of Warp Zone, of course.
Which is a team at Arcade that performs there quite often, including tonight, if you're listening to this April 13th.
What's the premise?
So it's Friday the 13th.
Oh, it is.
So we're doing an improv show and some sketches in the middle, just about some kids that happen to be going to a cabin in the woods. So nothing can probably go wrong.
Nothing ever goes wrong
no.
under this. I had a moment of great disappointment. Speaking of podcasts and cabins, I just listened to Jason Alexander on Marc Maron.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I was hoping that he would show some love and affection for the early 80s horror movie The Burning, which is his first film credit.
Really?
At like 20 years old. It's a Friday the 13th knockoff. That was also the first Weinstein-produced film as a now a black mark, but adding to its cultural footnote status. And I just remember it being weird that Jason Alexander was in this really random kind of C-grade horror movie and thought maybe he'll reflect fondly on it. And no, he trashed it instantly. Like, he was ashamed to acknowledge it.
You know, in preparation for this Warp Zone show, mm-hmm. I've never seen Friday the 13th, the original.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad that Aaron's not on the podcast today because he would be very upset to hear that. I know he's a big fan.
Yeah.
I personally could not get through it.
Oh, wow.
It was very boring.
It is one of those things that is not good enough, is not necessarily good enough to stand up to everything else you've seen since.
Yeah.
It might have been a Gene Siskel review. I read some prominent critic's review of the original Friday the 13th recently that ran when the movie came out and described it as, you know, the most, you know, extreme and vile thing that had been foisted upon the broad movie-going public. And now it's like, this is quite tame, realistically.
Quite tame. And I like... horror movies of that era.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not opposed to 70s and 80s horror movies. I like a lot of them. I think I will probably go back to it and just watch the ending. Everybody I talked to was like, you'll just go to the like towards the end when things get real hairy for them. But the build up to just getting everyone to the camp and getting to the camp, I was falling asleep a little bit.
There is a lot of nothing happening.
Yeah.
There's a lot of they're at the camp now. There's a snake in one of the cabins, which is like the that scene is bizarre because it's a threat that has no even thematic relation to the actual threat they will later face. It is just normal outdoors problem.
Yeah.
And they kind of violently kill the snake with a machete.
I mean, I guess I would do the same thing.
Well, yeah, but why was any of that in the movie?
That's true. It was a red herring, perhaps. I don't know.
Speaking of why was any of that in the movie?
Yes.
No, we'll get to that in a minute. Since you mentioned this weekend at Arcade Comedy Theater, please go down and see Warp Zone tonight. Absolutely one of my favorite teams and shows at Arcade. Come to Arcade as well tomorrow night, Saturday the 14th, for the second installment of Sean Collier Presents. I am Sean, and I will be presenting stand-up comedy. And the first one went really, really well with Jeff Conkle, Osha Dwyer, and Samantha Bentley. For this one, we're bringing in Bill Crawford from the DVE Morning Show, who, we all kind of know this, but I was just on a show with him on Saturday. I think that he could well be the best comic based in Pittsburgh.
Really?
And certainly our co-host, Aaron Kleiber, could well be that as well. But Bill is absolutely somebody who, had he not taken a job hosting a morning show, would probably, have a Netflix special by now.
Yeah. No, he's rock solid. He's awesome. We're very excited. It's a 7 o'clock show. So it's it's a nice time to get some dinner at 4 or 5 o'clock and then mosey down the street to Arcade. It's a nice, get out of town before it gets too late.
Yeah. You're going to be in bed. I love being in bed at a decent hour.
So that's exactly how you want to sell a stand-up show.
Exactly. Ignoring that all the other installments of Sean Collier Presents are usually at 9. But no, this time, let us appeal to you, the sleepy comedy fan.
Yes.
That you'll get... No, really. I mean, I think I was about 30, 29, 30, when I started to go, when I can do a bunch of stuff and still get a full night's sleep, that's what I'm after.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, it'll be funny, too. Bill Crawford, Ed Bailey will be featuring a guest set from Ramsey Daniels, who I think is leaving town at some point soon. I might have totally made that up.
He was supposed to leave town a year ago and then did not.
Oh, well, maybe that's finally happening.
I hope it's not, because we love him here. So we think Ramsey's wonderful, so hopefully he's not leaving town.
There was something where I was maybe going to move him later, and he was like, no, in any case, he's hilarious.
Yes.
This is of no interest to anyone, even me, really. But the point is, come out both tonight and tomorrow night to Arcade Comedy Theater and arcadecomedytheater.com for advanced tickets.
That's it.
Advanced tickets are the way to go. Either one or both of these shows could well sell out.
Hey, anything's a possibility.
Yeah. We have already sold upwards of 5 tickets as we are recording this, and that number could jump up at any time. No, really, the last one was almost sold out.
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was a great turnout. I think this weekend's going to be a big weekend for comedy in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, we should acknowledge, too, the Burning Bridges Festival here at Arcade and all over Pittsburgh. Shows here, shows at Club Cafe, shows at other places, Ham Bones. I'll be on a show at Ham Bones on Friday night, but every stand-up comic in Pittsburgh and every stand-up comic who felt like driving to Pittsburgh, tons of talent coming in from out of town. So I don't want to get the website wrong, so I will say Google Burning Bridges Festival.
Yeah.
That business taken care of. What was that transition I had a moment ago? Speaking of things that didn't need to be in the movie at all.
Yes.
Roughly all of Rampage.
Ooh.
Give me your snap reaction.
I'll just say some phrases.
Okay, that sounds fun.
Some phrases that you wouldn't necessarily expect to get from a video game-based film about big monsters.
Yeah.
Things like anti-poaching message.
Yes, or, surprising, but it's still know, in the universe.
Yeah,
then,
yeah, then 9/11.
Yeah, didn't think that was going to be brought up.
Didn't 9/11 imagery. If you're triggered by that,
yeah.
Don't go see this one.
Extensive 9/11 imagery, like to the point where they had to know, right? Like not accidental or incidental, like. No, that's only one thing, what you're doing there.
Right. Very strange. Very strange.
Shock moments of shocking, intense violence.
Yeah.
In a PG-13 rated movie. And I about halfway through, the connection I made was, they are aping, get it, it's a pun.
That's good.
Jurassic World.
Oh.
To down to some similarities in the objective of the villains. I'll come back around to that point in a minute, but it had that things are going very wrong and it is serious business tone to it.
Yes,
which was exactly the wrong tone for this movie.
Yeah, I mean it's. I've seen. I was thinking after the film about the like big number of video game movies that I have seen.
Yeah.
Kind of on accident. I don't really seek them out. None of them are good. Mortal Kombat, I think, is the best out of what I've seen, and I only say that ironically.
It kind of did what it showed up to do.
It did.
I guess.
And I saw it when I was like 10 or 12,
yeah.
and it stuck with me. But everything else, but similar to a lot of video game movies, thinking of like Super Mario Brothers, the Resident Evil franchise, even Street Fighter, it took itself too seriously.
Yeah.
And struck a weirdly serious tone. The characters were very dour and serious. They had a lot of, like, there wasn't, nobody seemed to be having fun.
Yeah, it's, and I updated this for Tomb Raider. I went back and checked the number of good video game adaptations stands at zero. I don't think there's, because we're not going to read the entire list, but I'm just going to hit the ones that might have been okay. Like, some people have fond memories of the Angelina Jolie Tomb Raider.
Yeah, I saw those in the theaters as a kid. I don't remember.
Nothing. No. I'm sure I saw them. I couldn't tell you anything about them.
They were like national treasure.
Yeah. The first Resident Evil, maybe?
It's not bad. Money-wise, the Resident Evil movies have probably been
very
the
profitable.
Most successful.
Some people like Silent Hill. I think I saw one of those, and it was like, well, it's
yeah.
You tried. And then I'm trying to find something else that's even close to good. And even then, recently, where you think, okay, we've been doing this for 25 years, trying to make video games into movies. They have to have it by now. And recently, it's like, the new Tomb Raider, bad.
Right.
Assassin's Creed, so boring. And that should have worked.
Right.
Warcraft, the movie.
I heard that was a disaster.
It was really bad. Need for Speed was okay in that it had nothing to do with the video game. It was just a car racing movie.
All right.
But, yeah.
Given the history of video game films, clearly it made so much sense to take this like extremely paper thin plot of a video game about big monsters that punch buildings and build a multi-million dollar movie out of it.
Yeah. Which let's dive into this. There was a prominently displayed Rampage arcade cabinet in the film.
Yeah.
This wasn't like a freeze frame like you can see it in the background, and it's a deep Easter egg. There were 12 shots of it.
I think they had two different Rampage. There were two machines side by side.
Oh, and they were both Rampage?
I think so. Almost implying, one could draw the conclusion that the villains in this film got the idea for what they were doing from playing Rampage, the arcade game.
That's what I think we were meant to believe. Because it was in the CEO's, penthouse office.
And then they called their project Project Rampage.
Yes.
So, clearly, unless they did the thing where they were trying to name the project and they looked around the room and
right.
pointed at the thing.
Isn't it coincidental that that's the arcade cabinet? The Project Pac-Man would have had no thematic ties to what we're doing here.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, second question, what the hell were they doing? What was the objective of the villain?
Yeah, don't know.
Not at
I
all.
I guess they, well, they, like so many other movies that I guess are about some sort of like, we're building a super soldier, right? Some sort of DNA, super.
Yeah.
Like this movie figures out a way to make it be all about DNA.
Mm-hmm.
Their plot is always, we're going to sell it to somebody.
Right.
Who's buying?
Yeah.
Who's buying?
Even in, which again, that's the plot of Jurassic World. Where they're trying to train the raptors so that they could be used as soldiers. Again, thin even there. But in Jurassic World, they sort of justified what they were doing. This movie specifies that the technology they have makes animals grow forever, become hopelessly aggressive, regenerative, and cannot be reversed.
Right.
So, in fact, it's a later plot point, minor Rampage spoiler, that the only thing they can stop is the aggression.
Right.
So even in the existence of an antidote, it only removes the thing that would presumably make them marketable.
That's a good point. Like, North Korea is not going to suddenly be like, you know what, we'll take 10.
Yeah.
Like, they can't fit them in the country.
And even midway, they're like, I know how we'll salvage. When things have gone very south, I know how we'll salvage it. Let's get the monsters to come here.
Yeah, terrible idea.
There was no end then. There was no, end game to getting the monsters to come to downtown Chicago. And then we'll have monsters. It is so thin.
Yeah.
Everything that happens here is so thin.
You know, there's a lot of films that are like this that maybe are, I don't know if any of them are better, but some mm-hmm. might be. But, you know, it follows a similar trajectory. This isn't really a spoiler, that 80% of these kinds of movies have to be about the humans and
right.
on the human level and what the humans are doing.
Yeah.
And it all kind of builds up to the last 20% of the film, which has to be a big monster fight.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
But the humans can do nothing to really stop giant monsters from fighting.
Right.
So all we can do is the human character, like The Rock, has to join the audience
mm-hmm.
and just watch this thing fight. And so, the last – the third act of the film is just punching.
Right.
And animals that have very good aim at tossing one thing into another thing.
This is a starving, unhinged – rapidly mutating ape that is capable of chucking a tank into a helicopter half a mile away with pinpoint accuracy. That's, if you wanted to sell it to somebody, I don't know, I was going to set up a basketball joke and it didn't work. But the point is...
The Bulls.
right, exactly. And even at that, I'll just say the airplane crash sequence.
Uh-huh.
I know this is almost like a reverse engineered joke, but if we're in a movie about giant mutant monsters attacking a city, and you have a sequence in that movie that makes me go, come on, this is unbelievable. That means something went wrong. That's not a problem with me. That's a problem with your movie.
It's true. There are unbelievable plane crashes in mm-hmm. film. Most Mission Impossible movies contain one.
Yeah.
That are like goofy and over the top, and you're like, sure,
yeah,
this person survived it, or yeah, this makes sense. You're right. The plane crash in this movie,
mm-hmm.
also very reminiscent of United 93. Just saying,
This is all the major 9/11 movies rolled into one.
It hits
with
all
a big ape.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very upsetting.
Hmm.
Yeah. It just kind of happens. It takes a long time and is not really tense at all. The main thing about this movie is that there's a lot of action that I think is supposed to be tense or suspenseful. And just kind of takes five times too long,
mm-hmm.
all the action sequences.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all kind of, like, you're not at all worried that anybody of consequence is going to get hurt, while millions of other people are probably dying.
Oh, yeah. This is, remember how Man of Steel came out and, like, people started going, hey, tens of thousands of people had to die in this climactic fight. That's a mild inconvenience compared to the end of Rampage.
Yeah.
Where they, in fact, go out of the way to say, we couldn't get the evacuation done. They really dwell on the fact, like, hey, there's a shit ton of people around.
Right.
Just so everybody knows. Just inviting me to enjoy it less.
It's true. I mean, they were in Chicago. It's not like they were romping through Winnipeg.
Right.
Which would have maybe made me feel less bad because when it, like, you'd be able to get the 20 people out of Winnipeg pretty quickly. But this was like Chicago, one of our biggest cities.
Yeah.
And they are rampaging through it.
It was a literal rampage.
Yeah.
They had the people of Chicago had about 20 to 30 minutes notice that was conveyed to them by a big alarm. the kaiju alarm went off, and the people said, one of these again, and started trying to run across a bridge.
Yeah, most people escaping Chicago on foot.
Yeah.
Chicago is a sprawling, it's flat, so at least there's that, but it's a sprawling city.
So the Chicagoland, that's the thing, right? It's a whole, it just keeps going.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, memo to screenwriters, and what the hell do I know, but if you're writing a scene of downtown devastation, I think at this point you have to, the same line of dialogue in every movie, well, we got it evacuated. And then someone else says, great, but we still need to make sure that the city survives. And that's all the stakes you need.
Those are two great lines.
Yeah.
Those are great lines.
Thank you.
You know? Because not enough care is given to our cities that we have,
right.
as humans have built.
Yeah.
But there is even less care given to the people that live in those cities in these movies. They are just fodder, but it doesn't really bother me all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm not very sensitive to that kind of stuff because I've been watching destruction movies and craziness for a long time. I'm very desensitized. But if the movie hits the wrong tone,
right.
I suddenly am like awakened to the fact that these are representing real tragedies that could happen. Not so much the rampaging part, but like I said, going back to the imagery that is very upsetting in this movie at times. It's like, hey, wait a minute, this isn't fun.
No.
What I'm watching isn't fun at the moment.
We're not having fun at all. Not to go to the most obvious Dwayne Johnson example, this needed to have the tone of Jumanji. This needed to have that, like, we're just out having a good time and the stakes are low, so you can giggle even when someone explodes because we've set up low stakes.
Yeah, I think that's something, you know, you meet a lot of funny throwaway characters in the very beginning of this movie, and then they just kind of disappear.
What happened to all of those people?
They stayed in San Diego and did nothing.
Yeah.
I think a problem with this movie is it's The Rock is good. He's a fine action star. I enjoy him, but he's doing all the heavy lifting himself.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple extra people. Pittsburgh's own Joe Manganiello shows up for a second.
Yeah, hey Joe.
Hey Joe.
Good day. The more money you make, the better. If you instead of watching this movie, watch Joe in the new Pee-wee movie that came out like a year ago on Netflix.
Oh, yeah?
He was great. He's like the second lead in Pee-wee's whatever it was.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Playing himself. The movie is largely about how Pee-wee becomes friends with Joe Manganiello.
That's amazing. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's fine. But The Rock has to do a lot of the heavy lifting, both comedically and action-wise himself.
Yes.
He's stuck with a bland female character and a bland U.S. He's from the OGA, other government agency.
Yeah, it's very... you recognize this person. Naomi Harris... is the second lead, I guess, the love interest, I guess.
Yeah, it's very platonic.
The other person that's there, who has done a lot of stuff, including Pirates of the Caribbean and 28 Days Later, most recently. Oh, and a couple, and Skyfall and Spectre, which I did not know that was her at all. She was Moneypenny in the most recent two James Bond movies.
How about that? Didn't know that.
Was nominated for an Oscar for Moonlight.
So she's a phenomenal actress.
But just there was nothing to that character.
There wasn't, yeah, the character was flat, and she just was generic scientist.
And Jeffrey Dean Morgan, who we both went, what was he in? And then looked it up and determined it was Watchmen.
Yeah, he's like a poor man's Robert Downey Jr.
Yes.
He does a fine job. Again, the acting's not bad, but it's just more like the writers didn't give any of these people very much to do aside from just react to things happening around them and say lots and lots of exposition.
There's a lot of lines that I don't believe that the screenplay team fully understood as they were writing them. Like, at one point they need to get out of an army base and Naomi Harris is like, there's probably a medevac chopper here. And The Rock turns to her and says, "That's why you always bring a doctor." What does that mean?
Half of his lines, it was like they were like, any one of these is going to be the catchphrase that we're going to use in the trailer. So everybody was constantly saying things like, "I need a ride."
Yeah.
Or like, "That sucks." Like, everything was supposed to be a bit in a trailer, and that's how people talked in the movie.
There are four people to blame, and this is another one of those. What did I see last week? I think it was Blockers, where Blockers had five writers and turned out well, which is definitely the exception to the rule.
Yeah.
This is a case where there are four writers, including Ryan Ingle, who has done a lot of the Liam Neeson is on a vehicle movies. Mm. Carlton Cuse, who was a writer for Lost, surprisingly.
And Briscoe County Jr.
Yeah,
which is a classic extended cable show.
Yeah, that was like once you were done with Xena and Hercules, if you hadn't changed the channel yet.
Yes.
Another guy. I mean, I don't know why I'm shaming them by acknowledging who they are. There are four credited writers. None of them was steering the ship.
Yeah, yeah. It's clear that like there were a lot of ideas happening. There were a lot of subplots and a lot of backstory and things, none of which needed to really be there. I mean, we could have really. It's like if you shaved off a lot of the subplots and you added some more characters to work with The Rock, it probably could have had that fun element that you were talking about.
Yeah,
the tone would have been different.
Yeah, it's and at that. As good as the cast was, there's these wild problems just with the casting. First with the villains, where they cast two pure comedy performers. Malin Ackerman is kind of the big bad, which like feels like pull a name out of a hat casting.
Right.
She's a good actress, mainly at being like funny and wacky. And she has none of that. Again, that's when I really started to think about Jurassic World and thought, okay, I guess she's kind of like getting Bryce Dallas Howard to be this kind of ice queen CEO. Mm. And Jake Lacy from The Office and some stuff, I feel like he had a much bigger role that I'm shortchanging him on. Obvious Child. He was really good in Obvious Child. But they're just too, like, wacky, and they're, like, the primary villains of this movie.
Oh, yeah. Like, they're you really don't even see any other bad guys.
Yeah.
They apparently run a gigantic corporation that maybe owns an entire skyscraper? Wasn't so sure.
That seems to own the Sears Tower. Was that the Sears Tower?
No, I don't know. It looked like the Sears Tower, but then you saw a building in the distance that also...
I don't know.
It might have been the... Actually, that might have been the Sears Tower.
Yes.
So, yeah, they rampage the Sears Tower.
This is a dumb ape movie that 9/11'd the Sears Tower.
Yeah.
What is and even look, the only things that make Rampage watchable, and I guess the word is watchable, is one, giant monsters are so inherently cinematic. That's one of those things, like a femme fatale and a guy riding a horse really fast and a car chase that are just, if they're happening, if there's a giant monster on a movie screen, you're going to look at it.
Yeah.
That carries it some of the way there. And yes, The Rock carries, because he's so charismatic and watchable. That said, the script keeps referring to how, antisocial and uncomfortable around humans he is, which never is evidenced at any point. To the point where sometimes he goes into that, The Rock riffing mode, mm-hmm. where he, kind of calmly and condescendingly explains to a low-level bad guy what's going on, which is just like a character trademark of his going back to wrestling, and is infinitely inappropriate for this character.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, he not only does he hate people, but he's got a checkered, mysterious past that involves murdering poachers and fighting in the some sort of military organization.
Quote, wars all over the world.
So is he like a Blackwater mercenary? I don't know. But somehow he got hired at the San Diego Zoo, and he's the only person that can calm down George the giant ape.
At roughly the age of, what would you peg him, 40, 38?
Yeah, he probably is in his 40s.
Early 40s. He went from military special forces, mm-hmm. long enough to fight in wars all over the world, to a long anti-poaching career, to getting a degree in primatology and rising to the top position at a major metropolitan zoo. That's a resume.
Yeah, it's quite a CV.
Yeah.
Which, and it's all stuck with him. I mean, he's flying choppers. He's surviving plane crashes. He's using every weapon he can find. It's impressive, his skill set.
And we'll see him again in Skyscraper, his next disaster movie, a few months from now.
Oh my gosh.
It's kind of more of a Die Hard-y thing.
The Rock is on a tear. He's a rolling stone.
Yes.
And cannot be stopped.
The Rock gathers no moss. That's why he named himself that in the beginning. No, I mean, he is entertaining no matter what he's doing. And good thing. Like, if this movie had, Vin Diesel in that role, not to keep it within the Fast and Furious verse, but if that was anyone else, it would have been hard to make it to the end.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Or I just, the only other way to make this movie would be populate it with a ton of no-name actors and murder all of them.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah.
But just some fascinating choices.
The recurring bit about how the ape knows what the middle finger is.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah, and there's a lot of things. Like, this ape is perhaps smarter than apes in the Planet of the Apes.
Yes.
He just can't talk. But he knows sign language and very complex words like poaching and city.
Yeah. I don't know. I eventually concluded that The Rock was saying one thing and signing a simpler version of it at the same time, which is just me giving the movie too much credit when in reality there was a Dr. Doolittle level of communication going on between The Rock. Like, it was almost telepathic, their understanding of one another.
It's true.
And again, this is maybe a movie about 9/11. So, don't see it. Let's just conclude by saying don't see it. What would you, no extra butter this week. I did see 4 movies last week in a row. Are any of them worth talking about? I saw Isle of Dogs, which I did not like.
It doesn't look appealing to me. But I fell off the Wes Anderson train a long time ago.
That is going to be the determining factor. If you are still on that train, you'll be fine. It's exactly more of the same thing, mm-hmm. with questionable racism. But dogs, but those even each other out, right? Jokes about dog behavior and racism. It's, hey, you know, take the good with the bad. If you still like Wes Anderson, you'll like it. I feel like this is the only opinion you're not allowed to have about him. I don't care, really. Like, when he makes a good movie, I'm like, yeah, that was good. Mm-hmm. And when he doesn't, I'm like, why you gotta be so cute about it? Those are my only two. Like, I like Grand Budapest Hotel because I thought that was a pretty good movie. And
yeah.
Royal Tenenbaums is great.
Yeah.
But,
No, I liked some. I do genuinely like some of his films. But
yeah.
He's not somebody that I find interesting or challenging anymore. He established a style and he did not really grow beyond it. So
yeah.
I tend to lose interest with directors, especially, or at least I tend to lose interest with auteurs that get stuck in like one specific thing and do not grow or push themselves.
The best thing about Isle of Dogs is the way they animate dogs sneezing, which was very accurate. Other than that, didn't do anything for me. That was the big shock of last week, that Blockers I liked way more than I Love Dogs.
I heard some really good things about it. I heard it was strong female director. Is that true?
Yes, it is the writer, and I'm sorry, I don't have her name on hand. It is the woman who wrote the Pitch Perfect movies, making her directorial debut. And it's kind of a 2018, very conscious updating of American Pie more than anything else, but it actually did both of the things it wanted to do, where like the big dumb, you know, gross out comedy jokes were effective slapstick, and then there were the characters were real and had to deal with real things, and you know, I was on board with them the whole way. It's not perfect, but it's one of those times where I walked into the theater expecting like Rampage, and instead was like, that was pretty good. So I would give a cool recommendation to that. A Quiet Place is pretty good.
The internet's all abuzz about it.
It's
is it the next Get Out? That's what people are saying.
No. I mean, I hate to be in the position where I'm discouraging a horror movie, because I'm always cheering for the continued more mainstream acceptance of them. And A Quiet Place is quite good. And no more than that, which is still, I'm complimenting it. It's like a 7 or an 8.
Yeah.
People are going a little bit too nuts. It's a little bit, you know, one joke, so to speak.
Gotcha.
Horror and comedy, kind of the same thing, just with scares instead of laughter. And this really hits the same material again and again, very, very effectively, but it's not as good as something like Get Out. But I would recommend that as well. And, I can't talk about I Feel Pretty yet. The embargo is not up. So wait and find out about it later.
Fair enough.
Or tweet at Abby Fudor.
Yeah, she's got opinions about it.
Who did she go alone? Did you go?
No, I did not go. Abby and a handful of other female improvisers in town were all invited. So
okay.
They reached out to Arcade a group of folks got to go. So,
well, I will let Abby represent the film. If you have pressing questions about I Feel Pretty, she is Abby Fudor on Twitter, ABBYFEWDOO. The words few and door.
Yeah.
She's not a critic, so she can talk about it now. That is perfectly allowed. I cannot. So wait. And you're on Twitter.
I am. What is my handle?
So you don't tweet that often then?
No, I do, but I don't know my own handle. It's
is it MT Rubino?
It's Mike T. Rubino.
Mike T. Rubino.
Mike T. Rubino. At Mike T. Rubino.
And again, go see Warp Zone, see Knights of the Arcade, which I loved the last Knights of the Arcade show again, by
Thank
the way.
You.
I ended up including it in an event roundup for Pittsburgh Magazine, I said this differently there, and I mean this in the most complimentary way possible. I shouldn't find it as funny as I do anymore. Do you know what do you realize why that's a compliment?
Yeah, you've seen it enough.
Yeah.
You've been on the show once or twice. So it shouldn't, we shouldn't be surprising you at this point.
Right. That's the thing. It's like high concept comedy is very hard to maintain, you know?
Yeah.
And Knights has been going for 3-4 years?
Yeah. Almost since the beginning of Arcade.
The first
4 years now it's been going.
And I came back and I hadn't seen it in a little bit, and I came back a couple weeks ago and absolutely loved it. What's coming up for Knights? Do you have a guest or a tease or a trope or a...
They will be... we'll be end of April, last
mm-hmm.
Saturday in April.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember anything about the show, but I do know that we'll be there at end of April, end of May, and then in June, I won't be joining them, but some of the Knights are going to be at Origins, which is a giant gaming convention in Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
We may be returning to Gen Con as well. So it's... Yeah, lots of exciting things for Knights of the Arcade.
And follow Knights on Facebook. That is your clearinghouse for Knights information. Let's rate. Do you have anything else to plug?
No.
Let's rate Rampage. I feel like I can go to a generous 5 out of 10. That is, and to me, that's like saying this was a movie. This happened.
It was a movie. I would say it's between the special effects are good. Acting's pretty good.
Sure.
It might be the kind of movie that in a few years people will be like finding funny. But I'd say it's between a 4 and a 5.
Yeah. It's just a misguided film. And a parting note, if you are waiting for them to pay off a certain recurring plot point, they're not gonna. We stood through the credits thinking, that thing that kept coming up must be referenced. Nope. No. Go home. There's a weird pixel art picture of The Rock, and then we... Good night, everybody.
Good night.